Thank you. My name is Gregory, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA is recovery, one alcoholic relating to another, we ask only alcoholics to participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Phil and Dino, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that you will learn here what may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Lizzie will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Lizzie. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Barry will read the steps.
Hi, everybody. My name is Barry. I'm an alcoholic. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Number two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Number three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Number four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Okay. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Annie will read the traditions.
Hi, my name's Annie, and I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never to be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Babatunde.
Wow. Thank you so much. My name is Babatunde. I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. Thank you, Jero, for asking me to speak. And thanks to Rajesh and Ashley for praying with me before the meeting started. Wow. My home group is the Atlantic Group. And Jay is my sponsor. I'm rewalking the step. I'm on step 3. But I am practicing 9, 10, 11 from the previous walk that I've done. Wow, it's amazing. Wow, this is really happening. See, this table is turning. I was telling Gerald last night, like, I'm the guy that was always sitting in the back and just, you know, taking inventory of people, you know, speaking, but now I'm here, you know, but... how did I get here? See, so sometimes I kind of wish, like my alcoholic head is like, I'm not an alcoholic. This is not really happening. I'm just here because I want a better life. You know, I came here and you guys look like you have an amazing life. And I want part of that, you know. And but I came to find out I am an alcoholic because before I came to Atlantic Group, okay, let's retrace. I'm losing myself. I'm so nervous. I'm so sorry. But I came into Alcoholic Anonymous on August 4th of 2005, and the first message I received that day was a woman spoke how hopeless she was and how hopeful she had become, you know, since she started coming to AA. And I was just like, this is it, you know. And she was a blonde woman. I didn't think I had anything in common with her, but just hearing her speak, you know, I got a meeting book. A friend of mine brought me to that meeting, and that was after 4 days of, you know, drinking and drugging. Drug is a huge part of my story, you know, and I'm going to leave that to the side because I am an alcoholic. Before I got here, if you told me that I was schizophrenic and I was bipolar, I would believe you because I just know something was wrong with me. And I didn't know it was untreated alcoholism. And but I'm here now, and gosh, relax. What I have found is a program of recovery that works for me. And I don't want to give that up for anything in the world, you know. Can there's so much I want to say, but I just blank out and I don't know where to begin, you know, but I was born in Nigeria and my family moved here in 92. Before I moved to the U.S., I dropped out of high school and I came back to America. They brought me here so I can go to school. And I didn't have friends. When I got here, I thought it would be a good idea to join the guys that smoked the greeneries, and I grew dreadlock. You know, I wanted to be a Rastafarian, and, you know, it was a thing. And that's what I did for like 6 years. And the first 9 months of growing dreads, my family was just like, is going somewhere else. You know, I didn't speak with my family for 9 months. And finally, they turned around. And then, you know, I graduated from greeneries into other things. I went to school for fashion design. I went to school for 5 years. I didn't get a degree because the third year into my college year, I had, you know, got involved with heavy stuff. And I was always very good creatively, but, you know, with the... But I was a self-willed run riot, basically. That's what I was. And this is my story, basically. Like, when I was drinking, I was totally dreaming, maybe nightmare is what I want to call it. I was always driving. I'm 36 years old, and I don't know how to drive a car. I don't have a driving license. But in my dreams, in my crazy nightmares, I was always dreaming about driving a car, and I would be crashing and crashing. And I wake up like, why am I dreaming these crazy dreams, you know? But it came clear to me now, you know, that was me running the show, you know, and that is my self-will, and I don't want to take it back. I have surrendered to a program of recovery, which is Alcoholic Anonymous. Alcoholic Anonymous saved my life. You know, I wanted to die before I got here. And when I met my very first sponsor, I had 22 days. And I went up to a studio for a photo shoot. And I was to be photographed by, you know, in a project I was doing. And, you know, someone told me from a meeting, oh, there's this photographer, he's in recovery. And I went up there, and the guy has a big smile, and he's living it, you know, he's taking pictures, he's doing his work, and I was just like, wow, you have 7 years of recovery? That's amazing. But prior to that, you know, I was going to a meeting with 45 Solution, and because I was going to that 45 Solution meeting, I would go to like 5 minutes a day sometime. But it came to me like, I need to write down 45 things that is going to make me better. And I was talking to one alcoholic, and that guy said to me, the first thing you want on that list is a sponsor. And why don't you go home and pray about that? And that's what I did. And about 5 days later, I met Piot, and he was a photographer. And it was funny because I was like praying, like, I want an artist, I want someone that is living a dream. And when I met him, I was like, wow, this is my prayers. Like, I'm going to be just as sober and in recovery and well as is. And it was like, do you pray? I was like, yes, I prayed. It was like, do you believe in God? And it was like, yeah, I believe in God, you know. Because my upbringing, my family divorced when I was 3. So from age of 3 to about 11, I lived with different relatives. And I had to practice every religion that they practiced. So it was totally like when I came to America, I was just like done with religion and everything else. And so when he was talking to me about God and stuff, I was like, I have an understanding of God, you know. And without this program, really, I'll be doomed to an alcoholic death. That I know for a fact, you know. When I started reading the book with him, you know, I was so short with my alcoholism that I could not read and understand what I was reading. You know, I couldn't comprehend anything. But thank God that he read to me, you know. And that's how I started, you know. That's how I started. I wrote out my fourth step and things that I buried that I didn't want to talk about. I shared it with him. And, you know, my recovery began. And it's a one day at a time program. But for me, I have engraved in my head that to drink is to die. You know, that is like, I pray every morning. I use the third step prayer on page 63, and I could hold a job today. You know, I'm grateful someone in the program here hooked me up with a job when I had 6 months, and I'm still there. I'm just grateful for the, you know, for this program. You know, I have a sponsor. I have a sponsor. You know, if you're new, you know, you're in the right place. You have all these people, all these power of examples to take you through the book. And 1 minute. I don't know, but I can't believe this is really happening, you know. I'm here, I'm sober in New York City, you know. I never thought I would be in New York City and be sober, you know. I moved to New York City on February 14th of 2005 with the mind that I am not going to do drug and I'm just going to like be a social drinker. But that went out the window 3 weeks later, you know, and 6 months later, you know, I end up here, you know. You know, the best thing that happened to me in New York City is that I found a power greater than myself, and I'm very, very, very grateful to be a member of the Atlantic Group. Thank you all for being here. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Right. Our second 10-minute speaker is Beth.
Wow. Okay. Hi, I'm Beth. I'm an alcoholic. I have notes. I don't know why, but I guess it's my story, and I really can't mess this up. Thank you for letting me speak tonight. I'm definitely an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 24th of 2005. My home group is First Things First on 96th Street. My sponsor is Stacy. I'm new to the Atlantic Group. I probably have about 4 months here, so privileged to be speaking here. I have three sponsees living in 10, 11, and 12. And I'm really nervous. It's kind of intimidating. I want to welcome the newcomer. It helps me so much to know, I still consider myself a newcomer, even though I'm coming up on 4 years. The most important things I learned in my first 90 days, and I'm actually going to focus what I talk about tonight on things that I learned when I was new to recovery, because it keeps me very green, and I am still very green, even though I do almost have 4 years. I know that there, someone to make me laugh before the meeting told me there are three types of stories I can tell. The one I plan to tell, the one I'm going to tell, and the one I wished I would have told. So knowing that I can only go those three ways, I'm a little bit less nervous. What qualifies me as an alcoholic and why I'm here is it stopped working for me. If it still worked for me, I'd be out there drinking. Because I loved it. I loved alcohol. I loved it. I love the ambiance. I love the smoky bars. I love the way lipstick looked on my lips when I'd go into the women's bathroom and put it on after I'd have a glass of wine. I love the way light danced off a glass of Chardonnay. The darker the bar, the better. I loved putting in a good hard day's work because I could have Chardonnay right after work. I loved watching crime shows while drinking bottle after bottle of wine. I loved thinking one day how I was going to write those crime shows and how I was going to commit the crimes. I mean, I lived a magical, magical life, and I never left the couch. When my husband at the time started yelling at me and bitching at me for drinking so much wine, I decided to drink the wine outside of the apartment. And that's when my bottom started, my six-month slide, and I started waking up with bruises, and I didn't know where they were coming from. And I started coming home at 5 in the morning, and I took on a second life. And it was only when I started to think about taking on a third life that I thought maybe I should come into the rooms of AA. But that's a story for another meeting, different type of meeting. I drank at people. I didn't talk to them about my feelings. I've learned in the rooms of AA that indeed, feelings will not kill me, but drinking will. Sometimes they feel like they're going to kill me. I'm so blessed to have three sponsees. I will share that one of my sponsees came over to my apartment yesterday because she was going to drink. And all we did, she just laid in my bed, and we did crossword puzzles. We didn't talk about sobriety. We didn't talk about step work. She just needed company. And sometimes that's all we need, is just to be next to somebody. Because you never have to be alone in this program. And I love the we part of this program. I thought I had to do everything alone in recovery, and it's scary. I thought it was, okay, I'm going to get sober. I'm going to come in here, I'm going to get sober, I'm going to learn how to do this, and then I'm going to leave. And I'm going to figure out my life. And I made a deal with God when I came into the rooms of AA. I said, okay, God, I'm willing to get sober. I'm willing to put down the drink. But I want you to keep my marriage together, which was at best verbally abusive and controlling. And I want to keep my rock star career. In my head, it was rock star. I have the power, power to throw magic dust on things that are less than stellar and make them spectacular. Everyone in my job loved me. When they were having closed door meetings about me, no. My bottom entailed having a bottle of Chardonnay underneath my desk. I was one of five people running a company, had 40 people reporting to me, four news bureaus around the world. It was great. I loved shooting off emails at 11 p.m. at night telling people what to do. They must have loved those emails. I want to talk about early recovery. There were a couple things that people told me that really weave into my story. One of them was like, don't talk to people who aren't there. I thought that was a pretty good piece of advice, but it means more than just what it sounds like. I was counting 90 days. I was so excited to tell my mom, like, I'm an alcoholic and I'm getting sober. And I remember telling my mom, I'm an alcoholic. I've discovered it's not about being in this abusive marriage that I drink. It's not about, anything else. It's, it's about being an alcoholic. I have a disease. And my mom was like, no. Your great uncle Jim has a disease. You line up five shots of Jim Beam, or seven or something like that, and then you chug it with a beer. That's alcoholism. So because I hadn't lost my job, I hadn't lost my marriage, and I wasn't doing shots of Jim Beam, I couldn't be an alcoholic because I was, I hadn't lost everything, and I was just drinking Chardonnay. There was no way I could be an alcoholic. Yet I would wake up at my mom's place when I'd go down to visit with gum in my hair because I drank so much the night before, and my mom would giggle. We would not tell Leon, my stepdad, and we would throw the sheet in the freezer so we could get the gum off the sheet so he wouldn't know. It's called enabling. So she was a conspirator to how much I was drinking, and we would giggle at like these gum all in my hair and trying to get it tangled out. I was 33 years old. It's not like I was 17. Run everything by your sponsor before you do things in your first year. When I decided for the first 90 days I was skipping out of work during lunch to go to a noon meeting, because if I didn't do this, I was going to die. And I was told this by not only my psychotherapist, but by my sponsor. You will die if you continue to drink. You need to save your life. So I found out that somebody in the London Bureau, the people were talking in the New York office, where is Beth going? Beth's interviewing for jobs. Well, I needed to make it clear that I was so loyal to my company that I was not leaving. So I called everybody in the New York Bureau into my office. So 15 people. I got London on the phone. I got Hong Kong on the phone, and I got Singapore on the phone. People are waking up at 3 in the morning to get on the phone. So I've got 40 people on the phone. I didn't call my sponsor. I didn't talk to my, I didn't call anybody. Everyone is in my office, virtually or in the office, and I said, I hear there's a rumor. And I was so impassioned. I said, I hear there's a rumor, and I would like everyone to know that I wanted to say I love you, but I had the sense not to. That's what we said to each other in the rooms because we were getting sober together. I said, I'm not interviewing. I care about this job, and I just want you to know that I am dying. But I have a program of recovery. Oh, I didn't say that. I did say I am dying, but my prognosis is positive, and if I go to this doctor every single day for the rest of my life, I have a chance at surviving. So I just got the one-minute signal, so I just want to say this, that... don't make any changes in the first year that are drastic, and I learned why they said this, because everything in the second year hits the fan. I no longer have that job. I no longer have my husband, which is such a blessing. because you can have as much joy and as much happiness as you want. My life is free of all the things that I made the deal with God to keep. God didn't give me what I wanted. He gave me what I needed, and I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. So thank you.
All right.